podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks, 200 radio stations all over the country on April 26th, 2020. This is episode 1690. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of the Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Dive into learning a new IT career. Get the most up-to-date training with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/TWiT. For an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription, use the code TWIT30 at checkout. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at one-fifth the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition, with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com. Enter the offer code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. Yes, I'm the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you have a question, if you have a comment, if you have a suggestion, 888-827-5536. Let's talk. You and I, we can confab. We can talk about tech. We can go out and talk about the new iPhone SE, which people are raving about. Did you see that? One Android blog, Android Police, said, why is it that the least expensive iPhone has a better processor than even the most expensive Android phones? Not that that matters. Honestly, when's the last time you said, oh man, this phone is so slow? Right? They all do the job. They all get the job done. We could talk about the new Apple keyboard, the Magic Keyboard for the iPad, which is an interesting product, making the iPad much more like a laptop with a trackpad and everything. And I find that very intriguing. We could talk about that. We could talk about, well, what else? There's all sorts of stuff in technology. You know, I thought for a while, oh, it's going to be tough with everybody working from home. There won't be anything new to talk about. No, it's not true. The Ford engineers who are designing the next Ford EV electric vehicle, the Mustang Mach-E, they're doing it in their garage. That's how it used to be. they're in their garage working. I like that. Don't know when we'll be able to buy it or when we'll be able to go anywhere, but, you know, that's cool. Apple and Google have created they call it an API, an interface to the Bluetooth LE in their most recent phones, Android and iOS. It doesn't work on all phones, but it works on, you know, enough phones. They've created what they believe is a privacy-forward way of contact tracing. This is an issue as we start to emerge from our quarantine. We're going to want to know if somebody's sick, who they ran into. And this system is quite a clever system. And you'd expect that. Some of the most clever engineers in technology working on it from Apple and Google. They came up with something that will ship out to most phones. Maybe we already have. I think we might already have it. They said the middle of the month. And then in some few months down the road, they're going to do applications. But what they were hoping is that health officials in various countries would take advantage of this. Germany wanted to. France wants to. But France said, but Apple, you are getting in our way because you don't let us take the information off the phone. Apple said, you can use the Bluetooth. LE is kind of cool because you know how Bluetooth normally says, you know, pair it, here's a six-digit number, all that security stuff, which, by the way, is not very secure, but that's a conversation for another show. Bluetooth LE doesn't even do that. It just says, hi, I'm here, where are you? Oh, hi, nice to meet you. And the original use of it was something called beaconing. It was for advertising. You'd walk into a Gap, and the Levi's table would say, over here, over here. Hi, Leo. I've got some Levi's on sale in your size. Which wouldn't be disconcerting at all, would that? Pop up right on your phone. It would know you, would know your size, all that. Nobody took this up, by the way. Museums, a few museums did, because you get next to the Mona Lisa. It says, you are standing in front of the Mona Lisa. Yes, it is rather small, isn't it? And so that was, you know, museums use it. But it didn't really take off. They announced this years ago. Well, now it does take off. It makes sense because as you walk through your life, out of quarantine, out in the world, every time you get within somebody reach of somebody else's phone, it sends you a little token. It's not associated with their personality, not who they are, not their name, address, and phone number. Just a little token that changes every 10 minutes. And you'll collect those throughout the day. And if at any time you test positive, the healthcare worker gives you a little QR code. You scan into the phone. The phone then notifies everybody you were in contact with over the last whatever number of days. It's a very clever system without giving up privacy, right? It doesn't say who you are. It doesn't say who they are. It just knows. France said, well, I like this a little bit, but we must be able to get all this information off the phone. And Apple and Google say, no. No, that would be contrary to the whole idea of privacy. France said, you're blocking us. Zut alors. Then Germany did the same thing. You must give us all the information on the phone. Apple said, nein. But the good news is Sunday, today. That's today. You know, they're a little ahead of us. It's probably Monday already. But Sunday, they said, okay, you know what? This is a good, we're going to back Apple and Google's system. This is a good system. Germans like privacy. They were originally a member of something called the Pan, what's it called? It had a great name. The Pan-European Contact Tracing Association or something like that. Something silly. And now they've said, well, okay, you're right. Okay. Whatever. Whatevs. Privacy's a good thing. It is. It's a good thing. So we give in. We'll use the good. This is good news, by the way. It's good news for privacy, and it's good news for contact tracing, because it'll work. It'll work. Now, some people said, "Oh well, but not everybody has that kind of a fancy phone." True. Not everybody. It's going to be a voluntary download. Not everybody will do it. True. They don't have to. It doesn't have to be 100%. It just has to be effective enough to slow the spread down, right? And I think most of us, would you do it? I think most of us would do it. Especially if Apple and Google have this, what they call, see, the Germany wanted the Pan-European Privacy Preserving Proximity Tracking, PEPT. PEPT. Which would have needed particularly Apple to give in to this idea of you can have the data. Apple refused to budge. So the Germans said, all right, okay. You'd think that the European Union, where the GDPR, the General Data Protection Privacy Act, whatever it was, you'd think the home of the strongest privacy law in the world would have agreed to this. But I think everybody's so concerned about the virus that they just, forget it, privacy. Who cares? We don't need no stinking privacy. That's okay. We got to flatten the curve at all costs. And I think it's good that Apple and Google said, well, no, look, we've got a way you can do it and not invade people's privacy. Not a bad idea. In my humble opinion. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. You can call at any time. Kim's here. Socially distanced. She's about 50 feet away. So, Kim, go ahead and, you know, do a spit take. It's okay. I don't mind. I'm two doors away. Two doors down. Isolated in my soundproof and virus-proof booth. It's getting a little messy in here, though. I gotta have to empty the trash and do some dusting. Nobody's allowed in here. 8888 Ask Leo. There is a website, techguylabs.com. That's free. No sign up. You are more than welcome to visit. It's got a good search so you can say, what was he talking about? What was that thing he mentioned? And we'll put links in there. Actually, James is doing that. James DeRuvo writes this all down. Thank you, James. Writes this all down as I speak. So that, you know, you can just find it and enjoy, indulge. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to the phones next. So, I was talking about the Apple and Google API that they published the white papers on, and eventually they're going to do... Did my camera get knocked? No, it's just where it's supposed to be. Eventually they're going to do an app, maybe in a few months. But the idea is that health officials would use the API. You know who doesn't take no Schmidt? Ms. Kimmy Schaffer. Hello, Kimmy Schaffer.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I am very well.
Good.
It's nice. It's warm. It's summer. You going to the beach with everybody else? Going to get a blanket, towel, get an umbrella?
I'm going to go find my own private beach again.
Can you believe those pictures from Huntington Beach? And
no, not really.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I get it.
I want to. And you're going to get it, too. No, I understand. And I also think it's a little deceiving because, you know, they use long lenses and it flattens it out. And those people may well be 6 feet apart. You just can't tell because it's all flattened down.
No.
Yeah. I don't know.
I would go, but I would definitely stay away from people.
Well, yeah. Who wants to get it? You know, the rule on the mask, though, I love this and I remember this all the time. I wear a mask to protect you.
Right.
You wear a mask to protect me.
Yeah.
And I see people sometimes walking around, as I did for a long time, with those N95 masks that have the little valves in the front.
For shopping.
Yeah. You got a little valve, but look at the valve on the front.
Yeah.
You know what that valve does?
No.
Lets the air out. That's an outbound valve.
Oh.
So it doesn't protect anybody.
Okay.
It only protects you. It's for medical personnel.
Right.
See, I learned this just the other day. It's for medical personnel to protect them when they're treating a sick patient so they can't breathe in the COVID, but they can breathe out. So it's not protecting anybody around you. And that's not why you're wearing the mask. You're protecting them. You're wearing it to protect the people around you. Right?
Yeah. But I guess anything is better than nothing. Which is why they're making us do it.
I will make you a mask if you want.
I would love one.
I would love
a Leo original.
We have on the front desk, we have provided for all. And these
were. I have one of those, too.
These are surgical masks that go over the ear.
Yeah.
They're not as good as my masks.
No, yours are pretty.
Not only are mine pretty, but they really do seal the air out of them. You can hardly breathe.
Yes, I have found that to be the case. When I get out of the store, the first thing I do is rip that thing off my face.
Yeah, I got to get, it's if I can find some material with the podcast logo on it.
Ooh.
The Twit logo on it.
That would be cool.
Wouldn't that be cool? I could put that on the front of the mask. That'd be so neat. Just that little round guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm thinking about it. If I could find it, I have to find them. I have to cut up a bunch of t-shirts.
There's some like...
Are there?
Quadruple extra larges, I think.
Oh, the programmer size. Okay. Who should I start the show
with today? Let's go with Rick in Glendale. He wants to do like a BCC text. Is there such thing?
Yeah.
Like email?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Line one. Let's see.
Yeah.
Help him out.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Kim. Thank you, Kim. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo. I'd like to claim the position of being your 11th biggest fan of the Tech Guy broadcast. Been listening for 13 years since your debut on your flagship station here in Southern California.
2004.
And you're my go-to guy.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, well, go-to guy for all questions tech-related. And this is probably so obvious, but not obvious to me. That's why I'm asking you. And, you know, as Kim mentioned, I know on an email there's a feature called BCC, which is an homage to those old enough to remember carbon paper.
Yeah, carbon copy it stands for. Yeah, isn't that funny?
You know, I haven't seen that same feature on text messaging. And when my family sends me a group text, I can see all the people it's gone to. I want to be able to send out a text to like 10 people and not have them know I've sent it to 10 people so they can each reply to me if they want, not thinking this was like a mass mailing. Is there a way to do that in text messaging?
iPhone or Android?
It's Android. Yeah, I'm on a Motorola.
So there is, as far as I know, no way to do it in the iPhone Messages app. But there are, and I don't know if it's possible in the Android app. Google keeps, it's a moving target, isn't it? Google keeps changing the first of all, the app itself, and then second, the features on the app. So the current Android messages from Google, it might have a BCC. What this, just everybody knows this, right? In fact, I hope people know that, because I still get, you know, you send out a message to a large group of people, and what you're supposed to do is put your own address in the to a field, and then underneath it, there's this BCC, blind carbon copy, and you put everybody else's address there, and then when the people get the email, it looks like you addressed it to yourself, but they don't see everybody else's email, so you're not violating people's privacy. It also has the advantage of, if somebody replies, they don't get to reply to all, right? Because that's the worst thing. If you reply to all on a mail thread with thousands of people in there, they all get your reply. It's so embarrassing. Can you take me off this thread? So there,
if anybody out there in your chat group has an answer, I'm happy to download a third-party app.
There are third-party apps that do it. And so that may be the best way to do it. I can see if we can find a list of all the third-party apps. Is there anything? The problem with doing this, of course, is everybody has to use the same app. Although, actually, with Android, sometimes some of these apps you can designate as your official messaging app, and then if you do a BCC, it should go to everybody. So let me just look here. There's like Text Plus, Textra. There are quite a few third-party texting apps. I don't know if any of the main ones. I bet you Telegram does. That would be one to look at. I actually am a big fan of Telegram.
You've given me three names to search, so
yeah.
I'll look through those apps.
Let me see if Telegram does. I'm pretty sure they do. They have a really robust group messaging features. I think that they do blind carbon for Telegram. I would try that one. The problem with it, again, is if everybody's using Telegram, it'll be a BCC. If you send something from Telegram to Android Messages, not clear if it will stay invisible. And that's the issue, right? You don't want it secret. You don't want it leaked by accident.
Right.
So you might have to experiment a little bit.
Yeah, to save time, I'd like to, if I've got 100 people I want to text, I'll break it down and send them 10 at a time. I know I could copy-paste into 100.
That's a pain, though, isn't it?
Yeah. So, by the way, Leo, before I go, let me just mention, whatever you're paying Kim as your screener is not enough. She is just outstanding.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, she's, you know, it's nice because I come in here and there she is, her smiling face, and it just makes me feel good to see her. So
she's great.
She helps.
Thanks for the answer,
Leo. Well, it's not much of an answer. It's something. It's a start. BCC and a text message, as opposed to, you know how to do it in email. There's a field you can add to that. But I have to, you know, it's just one for experimenting. There's so many messaging apps. I actually have a folder with messaging apps in it. Signal's a good one. I really like Signal. That's fully encrypted. Telegram, not quite so encrypted, but has more features. There's Facebook Messenger. Can you do Facebook Messenger? We'll figure it out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our podcast brought to you by the fabulous folks at IT Pro TV. I'm a big fans. Tim Broom and Don Pezzett are great fellas. They were both IT trainers back in the day, way back when. And they saw what we did here at TWIT, and they said, you know, it'd be kind of interesting if you did IT training kind of like TWIT does. A channel you could tune into, you could watch, you could learn from engaging hosts who are experts in the field. Man, I mean, you want networking news information, they are the guys. If you want to get a certificate so you can get a job in IT, they are the guys. IT Pro TV will help teach you the skills to become an IT professional. And by the way, this is a great career, and it's nearly recession-proof. Even during the COVID crisis, people need IT, of course, maybe more than ever. Go to itpro.tv/twit. Sign up for these great remote learning opportunities. Take advantage of this time. If you've got some time at home, you could get a better job. You can get the skills to become a developer. Don't think it's just, you know, fixing computers. You can learn how to develop software. You could become a network administrator, a system administrator, or you could learn how to fix computers. In fact, they have all the certs, including the fabulous A-plus cert. That's the kind of, that's what Kevin Rose was saying. That was the first cert I got. It's a CompTIA cert. They also have Network Plus and Security Plus certifications. And because IT Pro TV is the official video training partner for CompTIA, they've got 12 on-demand courses for all the CompTIA certs. They're the best. 4,000 hours of IT training. IT Pro TV also offers corporate standard, corporate premium, and corporate enterprise plans to fit the business you're in. If you're about to cancel your next conference, don't forget IT Pro TV can also facilitate that virtual conference. They could take your conference online with general sessions and breakout sessions. They could do it with speakers live in studio or remotely. They've got the skills. They've got the studio, beautiful studio in Gainesville. Get the skills you need to be an IT professional or set up your team for success. Go to itpro.tv/twit. Use the code TWIT30 for 30% off all consumer subscriptions. 30% off for life, as long as you stay active. itpro.tv/twit. The code is TWIT30 for an additional 30% off the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Don. We really appreciate your support here. We've been glad to work with you for many years now, and I look forward to many more. And folks, if you want to help TWIT, best thing you can do, and help yourself, go to itpro.tv/twit. It's time for the low-riding Sam Abu-Samid. He's our car guy, principal researcher at Guidehouse Insights. He does a fabulous podcast called Wheel Bearings. You'll find that at wheelbearings.media, and he joins us every week right about this here time to talk about automobiles. Hi, Sammy.
Hello, Leo. How are you this week?
I am well. Did you have
it's
watched?
It's warm out there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. How is it in Detroit? Ypsilanti.
It's about 60 degrees today.
Yeah, that's warm. Spring has sprung. Yeah. So
warm enough.
Have you been watching Westworld?
I have. I did watch it.
They've got autonomous vehicles in there, which, by the way, very handily have bulletproof glass. But they're completely clear autonomous vehicles that look a little bit like that vehicle right behind you.
That's true.
Is that from Westworld?
No, that's the Navya Arma. It's from a French startup. They've been testing those around various places for about 4 years now, I think. There's a couple of them here in Ann Arbor running on the University of Michigan campus. There's some in Las Vegas. They're in about, I think, about a dozen different countries.
This is now the time, right? This is why it's very interesting. You can't predict the future very well because who would have thought the virus, right? And then who would have thought that would further autonomous vehicles, because nobody wants to get in the car with anybody. We need some way to spray them down every time somebody gets out. But we can solve that. I also saw a story.
That's exactly why I brought up these two particular vehicles.
Yeah. Why? Because they spray them down inside?
No, actually, that's actually going to be one of the problems going forward with robo-taxis. You know, aside from the basic problem of, trying to get the automated driving technology to work reliably, right now, since the pandemic started, ride hailing has dropped off to almost nothing. Nobody's taking Ubers or Lyfts or, any of the other companies anywhere. And, even once this subsides, the feeling is that a lot of people are going to be reluctant to get into shared vehicles. And, this is not just, ride hailing vehicles, but also even public transit, and we may end up, at least for a time, seeing a shift back to personal use vehicles, because people don't want to get into a vehicle, they don't know who's been in there before them. And so this is one of the challenges that the developers of these vehicles are going to have to address, is how to sanitize them on the fly, when they're out running. And I wrote a blog post for our company blog a few weeks ago.
What if you put UV light in the cabs?
That's one possible solution. I mean, the thing is, obviously, you can't do that while there are people in the vehicle. So, no. You have to
get a sunburn.
You have to have gaps in between the passengers.
There's also,
how long do you have to expose it?
UV works unless it's not exposed. So, you know, that's the problem. If somebody puts, you know, if there's something under the seat or whatever, the UV is not going to reach it. So it's an interesting challenge.
Yeah. So you know, what we're seeing, and actually this is a trend that was actually starting even before the pandemic. You know, a lot of the companies that are involved in developing automated vehicles have been, over the last year, been shifting their focus from robo-taxis, which there's, you know, significantly more challenges associated with that, to goods delivery. Using them, you know, like delivery bots. So the little white vehicle here in front of the arena, that's one from a company, a Bay Area startup called Nuro. They recently got approval from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to build a fleet of vehicles, you know, because obviously they, you know, there's a bunch of things that are required by safety regulations that you don't really need on a vehicle like this. And this is a vehicle that's not even designed to carry people. It's only designed to carry packages, groceries, things like that. And then the Navya, the blue and black vehicle, that's one that's being tested in Jacksonville, Florida, at the Mayo Clinic. And, you know, prior to the pandemic, you know, they were using it for carrying people around. But now both of these vehicles are being used to shuttle medical supplies. So the Navya is, you know, they're using it at the Mayo Clinic to take test samples from people that are being tested for COVID from the drive-through testing area in the parking lot to the lab. And, you know, by using an automated vehicle now, you know, there's less risk of exposing somebody, you know, having somebody, a human driving that vehicle, less risk of exposing them to the virus or to these samples. And then they're also using it to shuttle supplies around the various buildings on the Mayo Clinic campus. And same thing with the Nuro vehicles. They're using a couple of these in Sacramento to shuttle. There's a field hospital that was set up at this arena, the Sleep Train Arena. And so they're using the vehicles to shuttle medical samples or medical supplies around the to the field hospital. And again, you know, it takes some of the workload because you've got, you know, so many of the people that are working at these facilities, you know, are really busy. So it takes off some of the workload from those people and also puts fewer people at risk of exposure to some of the samples and other things.
This is kind of interesting. Yeah. Also those little mini robots, not just vehicles, but like the little the ones that go down the street apparently are suddenly very popular as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of those being tested around. You know, we call them delivery bots. You know, the Nuro is a little bigger than some of those delivery bots.
Big, it's hard to tell from the picture behind you, but it looks like a van.
It's about 10 feet long.
Okay.
And it's about half the width of a typical vehicle, vehicle. So it's probably about 4 feet wide, roughly. And, you know,
it wouldn't go down the sidewalk. You have to keep on the street with that, I would imagine.
Yeah, that one runs on the street. Some of the smaller ones can operate on sidewalks depending on what the rules are in a particular location. But, you know, I think going forward, you know, over the next 5 or 6 years, it's really going to be these delivery vehicles that are going to be the dominant application for automated driving, at least through mid-decade, much more so probably than robo-taxis.
Interesting. Yeah. I think you're right. And I think that, it's so interesting because you can't predict the future because there's just sudden discontinuities. It's not a gradual climb. It might hurt autonomous, COVID might hurt autonomous vehicles. That's, I've seen that as well, that the self-driving vehicles might be slowed down by it. But autonomous delivery might be sped up by it. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, just kind of a shift in strategy and how you deploy them, because you know, with AVs, you know, if you're carrying people, you know, you have to get people to trust the technology.
Yeah,
you
know, it's a lot harder.
People to trust that it's going to work, so they'll get in and ride and pay for these rides. And you know, if you don't have to carry people, it simplifies, you know, what the vehicle has to be, and there's less of that trust problem.
This was the week that Tesla put out an update to its self-driving capabilities.
Yeah, I just wrote about that.
It scares me a little bit. It supposedly stops at stoplights, at stop signs. It takes exits. You just
green
enter
lights as well.
Yeah, you just enter where you want to go, and it'll take you there. Safe is that?
No, I mean, from what we're seeing, the reports of what people are posting online, it's very erratic in its behavior. Yeah. Sometimes it works really well. Other times, you know, it'll randomly stop at green lights. you know, and sometimes it's stopping very aggressively. So you got your risk of being rear-ended. So at this point, I would not recommend that anybody actually try to use this unless you're somewhere where there's nobody else around.
Yeah.
You know, be very careful in using any of these beta software releases in your vehicle.
Kind of why I gave up on Tesla is I just don't know if I trust Elon and if I trust Tesla because they overhype
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is stuff that they should be testing much more so internally before they ever release it. You shouldn't be relying on your customers to test this stuff for you.
Yeah, that's what my wife always said. She said, we're in a beta vehicle. It's a test vehicle. She didn't like it. Sam Abdel-Samad, Guidehouse Insights. That's the new name for Navigant, by the way. Same job, new name. He's a principal researcher there. And the podcast is Wheel Bearings at wheelbearings.media if you like talking about cars. Sam, have a safe week. We'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.
See you next week, Leo.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I don't know why. I've seen the headlines. I haven't read several articles that say this is going to slow down autonomous vehicles. Is it because, why is that? Is it?
Well, I think, you know, what's going to happen, and we have a new report coming out on this, our updated vehicle sales forecast. And what's likely to happen in the next few years, you know, because everybody's burning cash at an amazing rate right now. And so, you know, as we come out of this, hopefully in the next few months, you know, everybody, you know, all the manufacturers are going to be looking at their priorities in terms of where they invest.
Right.
And they really need to focus in the short term. And, you know, where they're likely to get the best return on their investment is on electrification rather than on automated driving, because that technology is just taking much longer to mature and develop than they anticipated. And so, you know, I think we're going to see them maybe scale back some of their investment in AVs, focus on EVs in the short term.
Right.
And then, you know, as the technology matures, you know, you'll keep developing this stuff, you know, and it's really going to be more towards the middle of the decade when this stuff is going to start to mature. So
I also worry because gas prices are so low now, down to a dollar in some places, that's going to hurt EVs.
Yeah, I saw yesterday $1.14.
Crazy. Yeah. And of course, people aren't going to go electric if they can get a dollar gas.
Well, I mean, the real risk is, you know, coming out of this, the economy is going to be so bad, you know, so many people unemployed that people aren't going to be buying anything. You know, not just EVs, but not new gas vehicles either.
Yeah. Not anything. That's why all of our advertisers are going, yeah, we're going to wait for a couple of years before we buy any more ads. It's like,
we're projecting about a 30% reduction. Yeah. Our optimistic projection for this year is a 30% reduction in sales compared to last year.
The 30s already happened.
And it could be much worse than that. Yeah. And the recovery is probably going to take about 3 or 4 years.
God. And that's with regard to automotive or just in general?
That's just automotive. That's just vehicle sales. The airline industry is probably in even worse shape. Some of these concepts they're showing for, you know, reconfiguring the interiors. Like there was one interior supplier, you know, that was showing, you know, a 3-seat setup where the middle seat is flipped backwards and they've got a plastic shield that wraps around. It's like, you know, it's like,
I'm
okay,
not gonna ride
yes,
that.
You're not sitting facing, you know, the same direction as the two people on either side of you if you're in that middle seat, but the two people facing forward, you know, on the row behind you are facing your direction.
You. So, and they're close.
You know, so it's not really any better.
Johnny suggested, and I think he's right, that air travel and travel in general won't come back until we can have rapid, widespread testing. So you get tested before you go on the plane.
I agree.
And I was talking about that with Lisa. And if you go on a cruise, you get tested before you get on the boat, but you can't get off the boat till the end of the cruise. it's going to be.
And then you probably got to get tested again.
Oh, yeah. You get tested a lot.
Just to make sure.
Yeah, just to make sure. Yeah. Sam, thank you.
Thank you, Leo.
Take care.
I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Stay safe.
Bye-bye. You too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Barbara. In Long Island. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, Leo.
Hello.
I'm
excited, too. It's nice to talk to you.
I have a friend in Torrance, California.
Okay.
said, you're a geeky person, so you should listen to this guy, Leo.
Oh, I love your friends.
Since episode 999.
Oh, well, that was a long time ago then.
Yeah.
That's like 10 years ago. Thank you.
I know. That's well, awesome. I don't know, but could be. Anyway, I have a 2015 MacBook Air.
Okay.
That has 23 gigabytes of other.
Yeah, other. The infamous other.
I'm down to like 11 free, and it keeps telling me it's too full.
Yeah.
Can I get rid of other?
Yeah. Well, you sort of can. Other contains a lot of stuff that you don't want to just delete. You can't anyway. There's no like, how do I delete other? But there are ways to clear it out and to free some stuff. There's third-party programs that will do this, like Clean My Mac. The thing is, so what it contains is a lot of it is just temporary files, cache files for your browser. It's also, though, text messages. It's media from text messages, like pictures that people sent you. It could be documents in there. It could be some temporary files, but it could also be some permanent files. So other is annoying, but it is fixable. But what I'm saying is you want to fix it using a tool that understands other.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a couple of things you can do. Do you use iCloud?
Yes.
Okay. So if you start using iCloud to store your documents folder and your desktop, and then you turn on optimized storage, that will help. That's one thing to do to the beginning. And then there is a more tricky thing you can do, which is to delete some of the temp files. You know, I'm going to recommend a tool that I've been using for years, and let me just check and see if it still works with Catalina. Are you on the most recent version?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I've used Onyx, O-N-Y-X, for a long time. And one of the things Onyx will do is clear out temporary files and things like that. So I'm looking, and they have updated it to Catalina. No? Yeah, Catalina. Onyx 3.8. It's free.
Okay.
So I don't like to recommend paid programs for something so simple as this. Honestly, Apple should have provided this. So it's Onyx is from Titanium Software, which is a French company. Just if you Google Mac OS and Onyx, O-N-Y-X, you'll find it. It's actually a useful thing. I've used this for years just to kind of do settings and stuff. But the most useful thing it is to remove temp files and those things you don't need. So Onyx is smart enough not to remove anything important.
Okay, so I basically specifically go in and tell Onyx to do the temp files?
You'll see. It'll do it automatically. It has a check. It has check boxes, and it'll just do it automatically.
Okay,
yeah.
But it's the temp files that...
it won't... Onyx is smart. In fact, this thing, I've been using it. In fact, this I had a check because I've been using it for as long as you've been listening to this show, maybe longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it's very good. Now, it's unfortunate because you probably... I mean, how much storage do you have? In 2015, they weren't...
Yeah, it was small. It's 128.
128.
I have 11 free of 121.2.
That's really not enough free. You really want more than that. So it's probably good.
It slows down, creeps to a halt.
Yeah. Because it can't put swap file down. It can't use temp files. Onyx may clean up some, but maybe not enough to get rid of everything. Do you store other files on there, data files, things like that?
I do. It's mainly documents.
Documents usually aren't big. It's more like photos, movies, and music that can...
Well, the photos, I did the optimize.
Okay.
The optimize.
Good.
Thing. So
good. Good.
That I did because it says they store the original.
Yeah, it keeps it in the iCloud and then gives you just little small JPEG thumbnails. And if you wanted
let me ask you about the pictures file doesn't seem to go there.
It will. It's the photos. You're talking about Apple's Photos app?
The Photos app goes.
Oh, pictures.
The pictures folder on
It won't do that if you just store pictures in a folder. No, because it doesn't know about that. It's really just photos.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Those are duplicates of what... Exactly. It'd be a good idea to get an external drive and move stuff that you don't access all the time off onto the external drive.
Yes, I do. That's why the pictures folder is not big. Once a year I go and I move everything.
So you're doing everything you can. It's just you have such a small drive. There's a nice utility called Grand Perspective.
Mm-hmm.
There's also free that will show you in blobs, colored blobs. Actually, maybe I'll recommend instead Disk Inventory X, which is another one. Disk Inventory was based on Grand Perspective. It's a little more up to date. And it's free from DERLIEN.com. It's called Disk Inventory X. But what it does is shows you what's taking up space. And better than, you know, that graph. That's how you know about other. You see the graph
right.
when you look at your storage. But this is more detailed, so it'll say these are pictures, these are movies, and you'll see what categories are taking up space. Maybe you could find more things that you could at least, if not delete, move off into an external drive.
Right, right. Yes, I will do that. It's a good thing to do on a rainy day.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of those for the next few weeks anyway. So
golly.
So yes, this is a big problem. It's a big problem on iOS too. The truth is, all computers do this, and Apple kind of opened a can of worms by showing it to you.
Oh, right.
If they just didn't say anything or just said temp files or whatever. But Onyx is great for deleting anything you don't need, temp files, stuff like that. Okay. And Disk Inventory X will help you figure out, and these are both free open source programs, they'll help you figure out where stuff's taking up room.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a nice computer. They did release a new one. At some point, it might be worth taking a look at it. And I do think 128 is just not enough.
Yeah, well, next time I do this, I wouldn't get so small.
Worst case scenario, what you can do, and this is the only thing to do on the iPhone, by the way, when you have too much other, is wipe it and reinstall. And that'll take away lots of it. But the problem with that, of course, is you got to make sure all your personal stuff is backed up, your documents and everything. So
right.
You don't need to do that unless you really can't get any space after that thing.
Okay. That's great. Thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure, Barbara. I'm glad you called.
Oh, thank you.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. I have mixed feelings about... giving information to users. On the one hand, I want everything. I want to know everything. But I think a lot of times we see things and we get freaked out. For instance, I get calls all the time, my CPU's at 100%, or I don't have any RAM left. My RAM is entirely used. Yeah, all of those things are normal. Computer's going to – why waste RAM? Why waste CPU? It's going to use it all if it can. Not going to save for a rainy day. That's not how it works. So sometimes knowing too much is actually a disadvantage. It gets you nervous about stuff. But when you do get – when your hard drive starts to run out of space, that is a problem. Because you'll – you know, things won't work. It'll slow down. All sorts of other things will go wrong. So it's probably worth trying to clean it up. It's just one of those things that sometimes a little knowledge is a bad – it can be a dangerous thing. A dangerous thing. And yet I'm the kind of, you know, I sympathize. I want to know. And I will use all sorts of arcane and dangerous tools to... I don't like wasting space, right? Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. 8888 Ask Leo, that's good in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, well, you could still reach me. You just, let's see, I guess use Skype out, something like that. 8888, Ask Leo. We go back to the phones. A very patient Rob in Tarzana. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Leo. You are a burst of fresh air, even though I'm in
the first. Don't breathe it, though, please. It could be dangerous.
Really?
I'll wear a mask.
Well, I got a couple of security-related questions. I just learned, and I'm sure you're aware of this, that Chromium browsers rely on the code of Windows 10 to stay secure.
What?
And, yeah, it was in Forbes magazine on Friday.
Well, first of all, always take anything you see in Forbes with a great big giant grain of salt. What do Chromium browsers do on Macintosh?
Well, on the Macs, it's okay. It's for Windows 10.
All right, let me go look at the article.
Apparently Chromium browsers rely on the code of Windows 10 to stay secure when they're installed on a Windows 10 machine.
Well, that may be a misstatement of what happens. Any application that's installed on Windows 10 mm-hmm. is going to use Windows 10's capabilities.
Great.
Right? But that's how it works, because you've got libraries that come, and it'd be silly for people to reinvent the wheel each time. Is this Google just gave millions of users a reason to quit Windows 10?
Yep. That's it.
Yeah, this guy's a nitwit.
Oh, okay.
And when I say nitwit, that's not an insult. It's kind of one of those, oh, wise guy, eh? It's a Three Stooges insult. And by the way, notice all the updates in here.
Yep.
You won't, but let's see. Chromium Sandbox. I'll have to read it. Basically, any program at all that's running on Windows 10 is almost certainly using Windows 10 libraries. The only way you'd avoid that is by using what they call portable programs, which don't install on the disk but will run off a USB key, which Chrome does not do.
So is there any browser that I can use? Because I understand that even Firefox and Brave use the same Chromium sandboxing engine, regardless of what browser I use.
I have to really read this more detail. My initial reaction is this is a tempest in a teapot. So first thing to understand, there's Google Chrome, which uses an engine called Chromium. This is why it's confusing. It's based on an open source project called Chromium. That's the engine. Chrome, then, the Google browser, has built on top of it a lot of Google things, Google extensions, that help Google with its business model, to put it kindly. There's also Chromium, the open source version, that has some Googly things, but fewer. But there is an engine called Chromium that can be used without any googly things. It's just the engine is what the browser uses to render a page. So remember, the way a browser works, it gets a description of a page, which looks like English. You know, it's just plain text, description of a page, which it then draws. It's a renderer of the description. And the thing that does the drawing is called the engine. There are a number of different engines. Firefox has its own. Google has its own. And that engine is often used by other companies. Opera uses the Google engine. Microsoft, most notably, for its new Edge, uses the Chromium engine. But there are browsers that make a greater attempt to de-Googleize and use as little Google as possible. I would take a look at a browser, and I'm pretty sure it runs on Windows, called Iridium. Iridium is one better than Chromium. But it's created by some privacy advocates, and it uses the Chromium engine, which is nice because everybody expects that. You know, that's the most compatible. It's from Germany, iridiumbrowser.de. It has all of Chrome's sandboxing security features. I don't know if it would use, you know, for instance, almost all browsers use the certificates that are given by, that are offered by the operating system. So the certificates for all browsers usually are provided by Microsoft on Windows, provided by Apple on Mac OS. That's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. So I'm not sure. I'll have to read what this article is accusing Chromium of doing. But because Chromium's an open source project, it seems unlikely to me. Chrome maybe, but Chromium, it's created by people who really don't want Windows, any Windows in their browser. But if you want to go even farther, take a look at Iridium, iridiumbrowser.de. It's very fast because it doesn't have any of the ad track. In fact, it makes you realize how fast the web could be if you didn't put all that tracking and fingerprinting in. It does take Chrome extensions because it is, you know, it's the same engine, so it's compatible with Chrome extensions. So, for instance, I use the LastPass password manager. That's our sponsor. And it works just fine in Iridium. So you can install that. You don't need to install an ad blocker or even any anti-scripting utilities or privacy utilities, because Iridium is kind of privacy by default. I think it's very good.
Wow.
This guy, Gordon's completely capable of writing an article on Forbes saying, not only that, so does Iridium. But it's to be expected. You don't want to reinvent the wheel. So if there are libraries and tools that Windows 10 offers, that's what an operating system is. The whole concept of an operating system is we give you fundamental capabilities so you don't have to put them in. For instance, no Windows program has its own file opening and reading utilities. It uses Windows to do that. That's what Windows is for. So it's kind of meaningless to say, oh my God, the Chromium browser uses Windows. Of course it does. It's on Windows. So I'll have to see what he's asserting, that what part of Windows he's asserting.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
great.
But
speaking of password managers, may I ask you a question about
sure.
that? I've been using RoboForm ever since you recommended
it's it. The first one I ever used. Yeah, RoboForm AI. Yeah, way back when.
Yeah. Right. So I've listened to you over the years explain the important factors, or the features rather, of a robust password manager, things like encrypted passwords,
right,
where they can't see them, and the state planning uses. And it appears that aside from a slightly dated interface, RoboForm is keeping up with the giants like 1Password and LastPass and Dash.
I don't see why it wouldn't. This is a good company. They make a good product. Here's the point. Any password manager, any of them, is better than none. Because, the idea that you're making up the passwords, which means you're going to do something you can remember, is problematic. It also means you're probably going to reuse passwords or vary it slightly each time. And that makes it so easy for a hacker to guess your password. So ideally, a password manager does two things. Generates completely random, unmemorable passwords and then stores them for you so you don't have to recover them. Now, there are nice added features. For instance, it probably is true that you want to make sure that password vault where all your passwords are is pretty well protected, because this is the one downfall of doing this, is if somebody got the password vault, they get all your passwords. So you want to make sure it's strongly encrypted, that nobody, not even RoboForm, has access to it. And you can tell that in a variety of ways. For instance, if they have a mechanism, I lost my password, could you send it to me? If they have a mechanism to do that, usually that means they have access to it. So you want to make sure that they can't get into it, and that furthermore, if they're storing your password vault, which they probably are for convenience, that they really are protecting it. Nobody can get into it. I see no reason not to use RoboForm. They've been around a long time. I don't know anything negative about them. Why did I switch to LastPass? I think at the time RoboForm was only Windows, and I wanted to use it on Android, iOS, and macOS as well as Windows. But I bet RoboForm now is on everything, right? Let me just check. Yeah, maybe it has. It works in Firefox, so that means it'll work everywhere. Yeah, Windows and Mac. Yeah, I see no reason not to use it. If it's working for you, and by the way, you get everything in there. It's kind of a pain to move. Although most password managers will let you export and import password vaults. You got to be careful doing that, though, right? Because during that interim period, it's not encrypted. So you got to make sure it's safe, and you delete it completely after you move it over, things like that. Okay. Oh, Project Zero. Oh, well, that's okay. If Project Zero said there's a problem, then that's different. You won't believe this one line change did to the Chrome sandbox. The Chromium sandbox on Windows has stood the test of time. It's one of the reasons we like Chromium, or Chrome in general, and Chrome Engine, is because it's sandboxing. The main one being the sandbox implementations rely on the security of Windows OS. Change the behavior of Windows. Is that, yeah, of course. Oh. Okay, so if a vulnerability, which of course Windows is full of, occurs, and there was a vulnerability in Windows 10 1903, it broke some of, which by the way is an old version, you should be using 1909 by now, which broke some of the security assumptions that Chromium relied on to make the sandbox secure. A sandbox escape. Well, these happen all the time. Yeah, we'll put the Project Zero post in. That's better than the Forbes post. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. So I used the break to learn a little more about this issue that Rob and Tarzana brought up. And I'll put a link, not to the Forbes article. The problem with when you're reading mainstream media, and we're listening to this show, we can't go into the extreme detail required to explain what the security issue is and what the upshot of it is. So we have to kind of summarize. And sometimes there's a temptation among some in the media to sensationalize because it makes a better, well, you get more clicks, to be honest. I'm not working on the clicks here, so I have no temptation to sensationalize it. I will, though, point you to, if you're really interested, Google's Project Zero blog. Project Zero is a very, very good initiative created by Google to find security flaws, notify companies about them, get them fixed, and at some point reveal the information once it's fixed on their blog. And so the Project Zero blog post, we'll put a link at the show notes, says, you won't believe what this one line change did to the Chrome sandbox. Even that, frankly, anytime you see a headline that says you won't believe, you know that's link-bait, right? You won't believe what happened next. If you do read James Forshaw's blog post, you'll see it's incredibly difficult. But the point is, there was a vulnerability introduced in Windows 10, 1903. That's the spring of 2019 version of Windows 10. Just a little change that made Chrome's sandbox less secure. And with a lot of effort on the part of a bad guy, would allow something called a sandbox escape. Now, first of all, I should point out that Chrome is one of the few browsers, if the only browser, that uses sandboxing. Firefox doesn't even use this kind of sandboxing. So it's nice to have. It's certainly one of the reasons Chrome is the most secure, and Chromium-based browsers are the most secure browsers out there. But it's, you know, having it broken is not the end of the world, especially since it's very complicated. The bug that is mentioned in this was fixed in March, and that's one of the reasons this blog post appeared. Well, it's fixed now, so it's one of the reasons I always tell you should update Windows. And I have to point out that, yes, this one-line change in Windows potentially broke sandboxing in Chromium, but last Tuesday, Microsoft patched 113 such flaws, many of which were critical flaws. There are plenty of holes in Windows. This isn't a significantly dangerous one, and it has been fixed. So make sure you do your Windows updates. By now, you should be not on 1903, but on 1909. And frankly, pretty soon we're going to be on 2004, the latest version of Windows, the spring update of Windows. And if you do your regular updates, as you should, this was one of them patched, not on this patch Tuesday, but last patch Tuesday. So these things happen. this one, and so what you have to do is you have to kind of look at the bugs, look at how hard it is to take advantage of, and it's hard. It's extremely hard. And what have you gained if you escape the sandbox? Not a lot. So don't get too worried about this. Yes, it is true that Microsoft changed a little tiny thing that Google was dependent on to protect the sandbox. Apparently, that's not an issue on other operating systems. And what I don't know is if it's a problem with all Chromium browsers or not, because all Chromium browsers, including the Iridium I mentioned to Rob, which I think is a really super secure browser, probably the most secure browser out there, do take advantage of sandboxing. So maybe Iridium would be broken as well. But boy, even this, the author of this blog post, James Forshaw, who is a very talented hacker, points out, this is hard. It was a lot harder than you might imagine. And I don't think there's anything to worry about. It's fascinating. It's one of the things that security researchers are looking for and try to fix as soon as they come out. And apparently Microsoft has fixed it. So I wouldn't worry too much. We do have a show, if you're really interested in this kind of stuff, where we don't go for the sensational. We go for the details. We get very down and geeky with it. And when I say we, I mean he, our host, Steve Gibson. It's called Security Now. We do it every Tuesday on my podcast network. And if you're really interested in this kind of stuff, I highly recommend it. I don't know if Steve's covered this. I don't think he has. So maybe he'll cover it next week. That's at twit.tv/SN. But warning, you got to be quite the geek, quite the geek. Yeah, I bet he hasn't talked about this because this blog post came out last Tuesday. So I bet he hadn't had time to examine it yet. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. It's a challenge for me because, of course, I do want to keep you safe. And so I do want to talk about things that you might need to do to stay safe. But at the same time, I don't want to scare you. I don't want to sensationalize it. And I don't want to overestimate or overstate the capabilities hackers have. Your number one job, if you're going to use Windows, truthfully, of any operating system, is to keep it up to date. Because these companies have very talented people who are constantly trying to find flaws. They pay a lot of money to hackers. They call them bug bounties to find these flaws, sometimes millions of dollars. And they fix them as soon as they find them. And that's why those updates are so important. Because once this blog post came out, there are undoubtedly people trying to take advantage of it. You'd have to be pretty good to take advantage of it. But there are probably people trying to do that. So you want to make sure you have the patch as soon as the flaw is well known. But all you have to remember is keep your system up to date. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. The Tech Guy podcast brought to you this week by Wasabi. Not that green ball of hot stuff on your sushi, but it is hot stuff. It's hot cloud storage. Wasabi is the perfect solution for anybody who needs to store a lot of data. I know a lot of you think, I just buy more hard drives. I was talking with David Friend, the CEO. He told me the story about a Boston high-rise. They put in security cameras, and they said, well, we'll just record it to hard drives, right? After a few days, they needed more hard drives, and then more hard drives. They suddenly realized, we should be storing it to the cloud. And with Wasabi, you can make a strong case that the cost of Wasabi storage is so low, it's cheaper than just the annual cost of the maintenance fees on the storage you're buying. Not even the drives, just the maintenance fees. And with one tier, not all those crazy tiers that Amazon S3 has, you know exactly what you're going to pay. Never any charge for egress. They have an API. Yeah, it's the same as S3, so you already know how to use it. And unlike S3, they don't charge for API access. They don't charge for anything but the raw storage, $5.99 per terabyte per month. And they do everything right. If you're a managed service provider and you're reselling storage to your customers, you're going to love it because you can charge less and make more. 80% cheaper than Amazon's S3, significantly cheaper than on-prem storage. Their disruptive price performance model makes buying cloud storage just a natural. So that high-rise, as soon as they said, we could put it on Wasabi, done. We don't have all those hard drives in the closet. Just put it on Wasabi. And with Wasabi, you're never going to lose one bit. They have active integrity checking, multiple Tier 4 data centers, highly secure and fully redundant. You cannot lose any data. And in fact, you're going to get 11 nines of durability. That means it would take you 649,000 years to lose a file. And you're not. You're not going to. I would submit Wasabi security is better than on-prem security. And there are now two ways to pay, and I love this. You can pay as you go, or pay up front one time with a reserved capacity storage. Let me explain this. Wasabi's reserved capacity storage makes buying cloud storage a natural addition to your on-prem storage. If you're thinking about buying more hardware, compare the price against 5 years of reserved capacity storage. You could purchase cloud storage in 1, 3, or 5 year increments. You get greater discounts for term and capacity. Just a brilliant way to save even more money. Wasabi is secure by default. All the data stored in the Wasabi cloud is encrypted at rest, even if you don't specify it. It just is. They follow industry best practices. in security and design, HIPAA compliant, of course, FINRA compliant, yes, CJIS compliant, no extra charge. They have great access control mechanisms too, bucket policies, access control lists, so you can control who has access to what. And my favorite feature, you can designate data immutable. It cannot be erased. It cannot be altered, either by fumble-fingered employees or by hackers or ransomware. It can't be. It can't be encrypted. It's immutable. I just love Wasabi. Great storage, a great model, at a great price. This is not just highly secure disruptive technology. It's turning the industry on its ear. It's 80% cheaper and, oh, did I mention, 6 times faster than Amazon S3. I know more and more people turning to Wasabi. At first, you know, this is an uphill battle. Everybody's heard of Google, Microsoft, Amazon. You know, nobody got fired for buying one of the big three. But let me tell you something. When you go to the boss and say, I've got something that is more secure, is less expensive than on-prem, is 80% cheaper than S3, 6 times faster, just wait. And they're going to say, what's its name? You're going to say Wasabi. And they're going to say, sold. Calculate the savings for yourself. Start a free trial of storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com. Click the free trial link, and you'll get free storage for a month when you use the offer code TWIT. That's our way of saying thank you. Join the movement. Migrate your data to the cloud with confidence. Go to wasabi.com, and don't forget to use the offer code TWIT. Thank you, Wasabi. My friend, David Friend, thank you for supporting TWIT. Thank you for supporting the Tech Guy Show by going out and getting some Wasabi storage. At least try it. Wasabi.com. Use the offer code TWIT. WASABI. Wasabi. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little surf guitar for all of us who can't go to the beach. Dickie Dale. Al in Charlton, Massachusetts. Hello, Al. Thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Al. Hello. Hello, Al. Am I doing something wrong? Pushed all the buttons I know how to push. Let me, I don't hear anything, though. Usually I hear something. Well, let me put Al on hold and go to line one and say hi to Naomi in Denver. Are you there, Naomi? Uh-oh. Uh-oh. This is why my greatest fear... It's a nightmare you have as a talk show host. What if nobody called? Or in this case, I got lots of calls and I can't get the sound up. And, of course, this is compounded by the fact that I'm not letting any engineers in this studio. And so this is going to be an interesting development. Are you still there? Kimmy? Are you still there?
I tried to pick up Al as well and couldn't get him.
Yeah?
I haven't even screened line three, but I could hear that person, so you can try them.
All right.
You want to put Naomi on hold?
Yeah, I'll put Naomi on hold. Sorry, Naomi. We're going to figure it out. Let's see if line three is there. Hello, line three. Yes.
Hi, this is Joe.
Where are you calling from?
Wichita. I spoke with you yesterday.
Oh, nice.
I heard a couple comments you made afterwards, and I just wanted to say that I think you really hit the nail on the head there with what I was trying to say, and that is that these developers in some of these countries can be negatively influenced
by their governments. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Exact same person sitting next to me in the desk in the United States would not do anything negatively or bad.
Oh, good. But I'm glad to have that clarified, Joe, because I was afraid that you were thinking that just because they come from another country, they're dangerous. You're saying, and I think it's completely true, that a programmer in Russia or China, authoritarian regimes, would be very hard-pressed to say no if, the GRU or the Chinese military came to him and said, you know, we would love you to put a back door in this. What is he going to do? So that's
a good point. I had a real good Chinese friend who just came over, like a genius guy, went to MIT and all that. And I asked him, I said, what would happen if the Chinese government told you over in China to do something and you don't want to do it? He looked at me. He says, something real bad would happen.
That's
what
right.
What do you mean?
That's right.
I'll tell you this. He says they can come to your house and tell you, get out. It's not your house anymore.
That's right.
And I said, what if you don't refuse? He says they'll shoot you.
Yeah. Now, admittedly, we wouldn't do that in the United States, but if the FBI or the NSA or the CIA came to you and said, we would really appreciate it if you'd put a back door in this code here. We think we've got a terrorist and we'd like to. What would you do then, Joe?
I get an attorney.
Good man. Good man. Hey, Joe, I'm glad you called back to clarify that. That's an important point. Yeah.
I mean, I make friends with these people when they're here.
Some of the best programmers I have ever met come from Eastern Europe, come from Asia. They're brilliant. Yeah. And so there's nothing to say, nothing bad about them, except that they perhaps don't live in as free a country as we do.
Exactly. So here's the other point I want to make. And then that's really why I called is about 20 years ago, a friend of mine came to me. And he said, can you get me a job? And I said, why, don't you have one? He said, I've been working in my company for 20 years. He said, my dad fought on the beaches of Normandy. And now I have to teach a green card applicant my job, and I'm getting laid off. That's his story. So my bone to pick is that, and, you know, maybe it depends whether you're a globalist or a nationalist, I don't know, but my bone to pick is that if you're a U.S. citizen, you should get priority if you're qualified for the job over a non-citizen.
Yeah, and I think, as I said yesterday, the bad guy in this scenario is the company that wants to save money, and so and it's the worst thing of all. And I have a friend who worked for Disney who had to train his replacement, who was a lower cost, lower wage worker on an H-1B visa. And everybody in his department had to do this. It was an IT department. Train them and then lose their job. And that's shameful, especially from a company like Disney that could certainly
have. That's where my friend was from.
Well, there you go. Maybe it was the same guy. So that is shameful.
Well, you know, I talked to these green card people. They're my friends. And I said to them, I said, you know, I disagree with you working here in place of Americans. Here's what, citizens, here's why. I said, you know, we spilled blood, you know, to become a citizen. We have our families, blah, blah, blah. And he agreed with me. And
yeah.
He said, but you know what they do to us? To go through the green card process takes a number of phases. Hold on a second.
Actually, it's okay, Joe. I got to run anyway. But I completely understand your point. I think it's really important that we don't discriminate against people because they didn't have the good fortune to be born in the United States. That's not their fault. And if there are enough jobs for everyone, then I think they should. Gosh knows. We're all immigrants here, Joe, unless you're an American Indian. We all came here from somewhere. And some of the worst programmers I know were born in the United States. They may not be malicious, but they certainly are capable of putting bugs in code pretty darn well. So let me see if I can figure out if we can go. I'll tell you what. You guys can work on the phones and see if we can figure out what's going on. We may only be able to take calls on line three. Sometimes that happens. What do you think, Kim? Can I pick up another line? What do you think here? Let me try. Which line should I try? What do you think?
No, don't try it, Leo. It's not going to work.
It's not going to work?
It's not going to work. Oh, I didn't know you could hear me. No, it's not going to work. I've just told them John's going to go reset the phones now since we're going
okay.
to break.
And okay, perfect.
We're hopefully have these people all call
perfect.
Back.
So he can. Our studio manager, who's also in another room, can push a button and magically make the phones work again. Okay, so if you're on the line, you're gonna all get disconnected, but we will reconnect you momentarily, and we'll get you on the air after on the other side of this break. Sorry about that. This is, by the way, the worst nightmare any talk show host has. The phones are down. You got 3 hours start talking. Me, I don't think I'd have that much trouble, to be honest with you. I think I could do it. TechGuyLabs.com, that's the website. If you want to, if you hear something, you want an article, if you, I've heard me mention a few different programs and stuff. All that stuff's up there. James DeRuvo is writing that down. TechGuyLabs.com. It's free. There's no sign up. It's not a subscription. It's just a wide open site. There's a very good search there. We even put audio and video from the shows after the fact up there. So it's a great resource. I hope you'll use it anytime. TechGuyLabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll see if we can get the phones working in just a bit. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. We've rebooted the phone system. Apparently that works. it looks like a regular phone, but I guess it's got some sort of, maybe it's running Windows in the back. I don't know. But we were able to reboot it and get it working. So if you called before on that, we couldn't get you. I think we can get you now. Like Al in Charlton, Mass. Are you there, Al?
I'm here. Can
it
you hear me?
It works. Hallelujah. Hi, Al.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Thank you. I have a question about Windows 7.
Okay.
You know, I know that it's not updated anymore unless I have reason to run Windows 7. I'm running Windows. I'm actually calling you on a Windows 10 machine right now, but I'm running Windows 7 as well on another machine, and some apps I can't really run on Windows 10, and I want to keep on running these apps.
Yeah. There's also hardware that will only run on Windows 7. I mean, that's, you know, that's what happens with older stuff.
You're right, and I, my hardware may or may not run
right.
The Windows 10. Anyway, so, and I know you recommend Linux to a lot of people as well. But let's just say I want
I can pretty much guarantee the software won't run on Linux, so okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I could spend money to change, especially scanning software that does, you know, rapid scanning.
Right.
Anyway, so I'm trying to protect my machine, and I'm thinking if I keep it off of the internet and just let it run on my local.
Perfectly fine.
Locally or network.
Yeah.
Now, but to do that, I was going to try to use my firewall policy in,
sure.
in Windows, and I'm not sure it was working. I'm not sure it really works right. I don't even know how to test it right. I've got the inbound connections, the do not block rules are blocked. So I put, you know, I don't know if that's enough to do it. Or what do you recommend?
So you do want to be able to see it on the network, right? It's not you don't want to turn off all networking because you want to be able to access that computer from other computers inside the network. Is that right?
Well, especially the scanning printer.
Yeah, and that's a Wi-Fi or a network printer.
It's a network printer, yeah.
So we can't just turn off networking, which would be the easiest way to make sure. What we want to do is something called air gap it. Except that in your case, it isn't going to be air-gapped because it has to have a network plugged into it. I would think that you should be able to, with the Windows firewall, block all internet access. That's what it should be able to do. So once you're in the firewall... If you let's see, this is the problem because we don't want to block local area network. We only want to block. I think what you could do is you could say, so your local area network's all 192.1. something, right? Or is 192.168. something? Or is it 10. But you so it's one either 192 or 10. So it's using. Those addresses, you probably could allow anything from a 192 address and block everything else.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That would give you access to the local network, but it would keep you from going out to the outside world. I think that should work. The other way to do it would be to do it in the router. Let me see. Nah, do it on the local machine.
Yeah.
The router... You could say block all outbound traffic and inbound traffic from the internet. I think you could do it on the router as well. because you do want the router to work for every other computer. This is the problem, is you kind of,
exactly.
Yeah. So I think you could also try the router, reserve the address for the Windows 10 7 machine. So there's always the same address on the router, 192.168.1.
Static for that.
Yeah, you don't have to make it static. You could just, routers will have what they call a reservation. And so you don't have to say anything to the Windows machine. Just tell the router, always, whenever this machine is on, always give it this address, 192.168.1.10 or whatever. And then I think you could easily set up in the router rules that would prevent outbound internet traffic from that address. Yeah, this is interesting. That's an interesting conundrum. Because the Windows firewall is not the most capable firewall ever. I think you can do it though. You just block all IP addresses except 192, because those can't be routed. Those are local only. You can't. There's no other way to do it.
Okay. Yeah, I was concerned about these remote code vulnerabilities.
Oh, there's lots of things. In fact, remember when they did the same thing to XP some years ago? They said, okay, it's end of life. We're not going to give you any more fixes. There weren't really any big problems with it. But with Windows 7, there have already been numerous security issues, two of which Microsoft even patched. They weren't security issues. They were functionality issues. But there have been others. There are some severe Windows security flaws that do affect every version of Windows. And I presume Microsoft is not going to fix that on Windows 7. So you're right. You shouldn't take it on the internet. That's absolutely right. I am not an expert on this. I'm hoping somebody will call in who has an idea to do it. Because honestly, I think you want to get this right. You don't want to trust me to do it, and then there's some holes in there. So if there's somebody listening who's a network guru, how can we use a Windows 7 machine on our local area network, still use all of the facilities of the local area network, but keep it out of the public internet, even though we have other systems on the same LAN that are using the public internet? We want to restrict it. That's why I think you're right. I think your instinct to use the Windows firewall is correct. But keep listening. Somebody will come along. And another way to answer this, by the way, would be go to the website, techguylabs.com, and leave a comment. I'm sure there's 100 ways to do it. I just want to make sure we do it correctly. And we don't want to buy more hardware. Somebody's saying, well, all you need is two network cards. Yeah, that's true. Let's not do that. let's not spend Al's money. Al, keep listening. We'll get an answer for you before the end of the show. We got 45 minutes for some network guru to say, Leo, I can't believe you didn't know how to do this. It's easy. Irvine Rob says, if you search YouTube for how to disable internet connection without disabling the LAN, you probably could find a video that will walk you through it. You know, it's a personal pet peeve of mine. Nowadays, everybody wants to show how to do something, makes a video of it, a video which takes usually 5 minutes just to get started because they've got to say, hey, subscribe to my channel. Hey, guys, hey, whatever, all this rigmarole because they're trying to draw it out because the longer it is, the more ads they can get in there. Where if you just wrote it, I could fit it in one page, a set of, you know, I could follow the instructions. Just give me a recipe. It's like if all cookbooks were on video instead of on paper. It just drives me nuts. W.C. Fields says in our chat room, it's simple, my friend. Just change the gateway address on the Windows 7 computer to an invalid address or leave the gateway blank. Yeah, then it wouldn't see the router, but then would it be able to still see other devices on the local area network? Of course, yeah, if the router has access control, of course you could do that. That would be the other way to do it, and use an ACL on the router. I love these kinds of questions. Al, I appreciate it. You got us thinking. 8888-ASK-LEO if you know the answer, or go in the chat room, irc.twit.tv, or go to the website, TechGuyLabs.com and leave a comment. There are legitimate reasons to stay with Windows 7. Absolutely. There's some software you have to run that won't run in Windows 10. There's a piece of hardware like a scanner or something. You don't want to buy a new one, and Windows 7 is the only version that'll work. But if you're going to use Windows 7, it would really be a good idea to keep it off the internet. Make that be a local-only machine, you know. And I still worry a little bit because it is on the network with other machines. You need a face mask, right? And you need a way of keeping it from getting cross-infected by the other machines. There's got to be a way to do that. Leo Laporte, got that buggy fever, 8888. Ask Leo, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Wow, the chat room's having so much fun thinking of 100 ways to knock a computer off the internet without knocking it off the local area network, including changing the host file. Hey, you probably could do that. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Setting the clock back so all the certs are invalid. Okay. 8888 Ask Leo. If you've got an idea, we can help our caller out here. Naomi, you've been patient. Thank you. Sorry we lost you from Denver, Colorado. I think the phones are working now. Hi, Naomi.
Hi. Hey, I've been told forever that my voice sounded neat, so I finally went to one of the recreation centers where they had a presentator that was talking about doing voiceover work.
Oh, nice.
That they want $4,000.
No. Okay, I'm going to tell you right now. Anybody who says, you give me money and I'll get you work, no.
That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, you know better than that. You do have a beautiful voice. You could do commercials. The problem is it's a very challenging business. You know, it's hard to break into it.
They say, oh, well, you have such deep resonance. Well, I knew that
beautiful.
Because I used to read for the blind. And then I also did this. I used to work for public television. Then it was called NET.
NET, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
And they would give me these big old mics. They said that the mic loves you. And they weighed 5 pounds. I mean, you know, like, well. And I would do 3 or 4 of them because I would change voices. And, you know, I'd put one voice on one mic. And so I got like 3 5-pound mics.
Wow.
So anyway, I was wondering, you know, if you knew any other place that you could get voiceover work or learn or whatever.
Well, there actually are sites. I don't know how easy it is to get work from them, but there are sites that are marketplaces for voiceover services. So you go up on there. You know, this is a very common category these days for all kinds of work. Elance for freelancers. There's, you know, so there's voices.com. I think I'm on there. I can't remember. It's a marketplace. So it's free to get started. You upload a voice sample. The problem, of course, is getting people to hire you and then making a decent amount of money at it. But it's certainly, you know, as you get more work, it gets easier to get work. It's like any other business, isn't it? That first job is the hardest. But voices will do it. There's another one, I think, called, let me see if I can find it. Yeah, Voice Bunny.
Okay.
VoiceBunny.com. So you can easily put your voice on all of these. I've used also Voice123.com.
Oh.
So the whole idea is you put a recording up. Do you have any more of those 5-pound microphones lying around?
Well, the cords that were to those were obnoxious, too.
Oh, I remember.
3 mics on your lap trying to read.
The other thing you can also do, and I would definitely do this as well, is contact local radio stations like KOA in Denver or any of your local stations and just say, look, I'm available for voice work if you need it. Because you're a woman, I think you're going to have a, believe it or not, easier time. There are a lot of guys, but maybe not quite as competitive among women. Especially if you're versatile, if you have a lot of different kinds of styles of voices. Okay, put them all on your reel. Those are awesome. So, yeah, the more versatile you are, of course, the better. The other thing,
you need a shampoo.
I love it. The other thing that is the case, is if you can act, it helps. Because remember, voiceover is not just the quality of your voice. It's your ability to, you know, act, to emote, to create emotions in your listener.
Yeah.
And so if you, and I sounds like you can, by the way, I think you could do it. So try some of these freelancer sites. Put what I would do is work on a tape. You may find there are voice coaches out there, and I bet you this is a good time to do it because nobody's coming to classes in person. So I bet you you could get a virtual class from people anywhere who are teaching this anywhere in the country. So there are definitely people who teach voiceover, and there probably are. You know, I've never done it. I mean, I've done it, but casually. I've never done much of it. But there are definitely some skills. And that it might be worth learning some of these, not for $4,000.
Yeah, I know. It's no. Like, we'll give you the license and everything.
Yeah, no, that's the old scam, you know, where you get discovered to be a model, and it'll only cost you $5,000 for your headshots, and we could promise you're going to get work. That's not true. There's a woman out our way, but Samantha Paris, who's wonderful, a voiceover teacher. And she probably is doing, you know, Zoom classes or virtual classes. So you don't, that would be nice. You wouldn't need to come to Northern California. I think it's Voice Tracks is the name of her business. VoiceTrax. But I'm sure there's also teachers in Denver and all over the country. Actually, when I think.
Yeah, for $4,000.
Well, don't do it. No. It should be, you know, no more than $100 a session or something like that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't spend a lot of money. It's probably worth at least a couple of classes just to get some information about what should be on your reel, what people are looking for. There's a business of it as well as the skill of it, understand?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I think it's a great idea. I like that, Naomi.
Also, I wanted to do Linux on this old PC that I use for the grandkids, etc. And you said you were going to do
one of these days.
Oh, it hasn't been done yet.
But it's not hard to do. I would go to I would look up Google Pop OS. That Linux works on almost every machine I've ever tried it on. It's mm-hmm. very nicely set up. If you're used to using a computer, you won't find it difficult at all. You know, there's settings.
Yeah, I was one of those old COBOL programs.
Oh, that's right. We've talked before, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You should. Yeah, well, then I have absolute faith. So it's from a company called System76. They make Linux computers. So they decided we should really have our own version of Linux. It's based on Ubuntu, but I like it better than Ubuntu. System76.com/PopOS. I really like that one. You put it on a USB key. Try it on that old computer. I bet it works out of the box. It's the easiest to install.
While you're talking on the...
Hold on just a sec. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry, I had to take a break.
Well, I had my job out on Monster about 6 years ago. And, you know, it was just old stuff that I'd done and whatever. About just before they had the hurricane in Houston, NASA called me and wanted me to come to Houston to work on some old stuff on the old.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Wow.
But what I found out,
of
some other people that we were talking kind of online and exchanging emails, is that, of course, the government took the COBOL compilers and their compilers are not vanilla.
Oh, they changed them. Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't necessarily want programs because I'm a systems software engineer, and they want you to fix their compilers.
Right.
So that they work with their COBOL programs. Because not only is the compiler not vanilla, the programs aren't vanilla.
So but they don't have the compilers anymore? You need to update them?
They do have the compilers. What they want you to do is coordinate the two.
Oh, yay. That doesn't sound like much fun.
That's what we all kind of decided.
Yeah. Yeah, you saw that the state of New Jersey, their unemployment system runs on COBOL, and they were desperately seeking COBOL programmers. No one knows that. But, you know, there's a ton of COBOL code running out there. Why fix it?
It's like, they're changing the programs. They didn't, you know, use them vanilla. They had different, the programs, oh, well, we want this program to do that. And so a lot of us, what we used to do was, we would put side programs in there, which would exit COBOL, enter BS, you know, whatever other language we wanted, and then come back into COBOL. Well, then the compilers, they changed those. So you can imagine the mess this is in.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of the nature of technology. Nothing stands still anymore.
Oh, I know.
Even COBOL.
Well, we're going to do away with COBOL.
No.
MVS. You know,
nothing ever goes away.
I'm an old mainframer, so what can I say?
Oh, man. Yeah, you should get Linux on one of your machines. I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, I think the kids will be okay with it.
Oh, they'll be fine.
32-bit, you know.
So. Yeah, they'll be fine because they're mostly just doing stuff on the web, so.
Well, thank you so much.
Hey, it's a pleasure talking to you, Naomi. Good luck with the career.
Oh, thank you.
You should also contact audible.com. I wonder if they're looking for readers.
Oh.
Well, I love it that you did books for the blind. That's great. That's great. I want to do that when I retire.
My senior year program, you know, when contribution to the community.
Nice.
To get into college, whatever.
Nice. Nice.
Well, thank you so much.
Take care, Naomi.
Bye-bye. You too.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, having some fun here. Grant, White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Hello, Grant.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I've got this crazy idea that I've been trying to figure out if it's a good idea or not. That is data-only cell phone plan and just Google Voice for like text messages and
sure.
Voice calls.
Sure, yeah. Honestly, I'll tell you where this comes up. I often wonder, why can't I just use an old tablet as a phone? All I need to do is have data on it, and then I can use, there's a million, you know, you use Google Voice, but there's also Skype. There's a million programs that will give you a phone number that is data only. And wouldn't that be, and absolutely you can do that. Absolutely you can do that. So the real issue is going to be, who are you going to get the data only from? And honestly, you may...
It's a company called Telo.
Oh, good. Yeah. The thing is that most companies don't charge that much for voice and text. Google, for instance, Google Fi, $20 a month. Because they know that nowadays, the valuable thing is data. But if you have a company that'll offer you just data, we don't do cell phone. You could use any device, even a computer, a laptop, as a phone completely. And Google Voice would be a good choice. You get a number. It'll ring through to that device. Probably sound better than a regular landline phone. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The lowest level plan on Telo is $5 a month.
Well, that's a good deal.
And it... 500 megabytes a month.
Yeah.
But they have, after you go through your data, they fall back to unlimited data at like 2G level speeds.
Right. Usually that's pretty slow. What network do they ride on? Do you know? Is it a T-Mobile?
Sprint.
Sprint. Okay. So, yeah. So that sounds like a great idea. There are also companies that do phone only. So there must be companies that do data only. That seems like the way to do it. So Telo is a MVNO, it looks like. They also sell phone service. But if you could buy just plain data from them, I see no reason not to. Google Voice is free, but there are other services that will give you a phone number. Skype, for instance, will give you a phone number, not for free. And that way anybody can call you. I think that's a great idea. Yeah.
And like falling back to the 2G level speeds would be?
Well, yeah, we'll see. 2G is pretty slow. It's not even 3G. I don't know what the phone calls will sound like at that speed. You know, we frankly, most of the time when you're using a smartphone, you probably are using data for the audio. Technologies like VoLTE, V-O-L-T-E, voice over LTE. Most phone companies, you know, are slowly abandoning the old, you know, phone voice services in favor of all data services. They just don't tell you that. So I have a feeling this what you want to do is probably a lot of people are doing. I've always thought, what do I need a phone for? I just need something I can carry around like an iPad. I could turn an iPad into a phone easy. All I need is data. 2G, it's going to be an issue. But the thing is, if you're only doing voice, I don't know how much data voice will use. Could use up quite a bit. I don't know. How many minutes a month do you think you're going to talk?
Barely any.
Yeah. Mostly it's text. Text and data. Yeah, T-E-L-L-O, tello.com. Interesting. Yeah, let us know how it works. I see no reason not to do it. I can't even think of it. Google Voice doesn't require another number. No, you can just sign up. I can't think of any reason why you couldn't do this.
2G is basically just voice.
I guess.
Data stream.
It's pretty slow. Here's the problem. The data-based voice solutions like Google Voice expect more data. You're right. I mean, your phone isn't using much data at all. They figured out how few bits could we send to still be audible. That's why phone service sounds so terrible, because they're really using as little data as they can. It's not data, of course. It's analog in the original phones, but the same idea. We want to use as little as we can so we have maximum capacity. So the phone calls sound terrible. But what happened is Skype and others said, well, we got all the data we want. We could sound much better. And then you're going to have problems. I think so the chat room's done a little math. 2G is at best 100 kilobits per second. G.711, which is one of the codecs used for voice, very common voice codec, needs 83 kilobits per second. So it's within the theoretical possibility. But I don't know. You know, you might have a lot of dropout and weird stuff and so forth. It's an interesting idea, though. I like it. You know, what do we need the phone companies for? We just need data. Ultimately, what do we need cable companies for? We just need data. We don't need any of this, you know, special service. Just give me internet bandwidth, everything I want. Video, voice, TV, music, everything comes over the internet. Of course, that's one of the reasons the telephone companies and the cable companies lobby hard against net neutrality. They really don't like the idea of you just buying wholesale bits, because that takes them out of the loop. You'll just buy your internet connectivity from the cheapest supplier, because internet's internet, right? So they hate that idea. That's not their business model. Their business model is charging you a premium for what's riding on top of that data. Judy, Porter Ranch, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
First of all, I love your shirt.
Oh, isn't this beautiful? SanMiguelDesigns.com. And my friend my friend Winton Churchill sends me these. Aren't they beautiful? Abraxos.
They're fabulous.
I have a few extras, so I cut one of them up for a mask, and it's beautiful.
Oh, terrific.
Wouldn't this be a good mask with the hot chili peppers?
Absolutely. And I'm watching you on my 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Nice.
I'm not quite old enough to be your mother. I'm 77,
Oh, no, you're old enough to be my sister.
Okay, well, I'm fairly tech savvy.
Big sister. Okay.
Okay, you want to adopt me?
Sure, sis. Sister Judy. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I have a 10-year-old Sony Bravia LCD TV.
Okay.
Not a smart one, but I love the picture on it.
Beautiful. Those were great. Those were the best TVs out there for a while.
Yeah. I know. Okay, I've got an original Apple TV.
Okay.
But when I watch Hulu or Netflix or Prime, it buffers a great deal. Yeah. Will the new Apple 4K work?
It'll work because it's HDMI. You don't have a 4K TV. You only have an HD TV. Oh, yeah.
That's,
it'll work just fine, but it might still buffer because that probably is not either the TV or the Apple TV. It's probably your internet service. You have, as you're watching this higher quality content, HD content, you want 15 megabits per second minimum down. And if you can't get that consistently, you're going to buffer.
Well, it doesn't buffer on any of the other things in my house. It doesn't buffer on my iMac. It doesn't buffer on
Just the Apple TV.
Just the Apple TV.
Yeah, maybe it's time for a new one.
Okay, I'm going to do that. The other question I have related is on the Bravia, I cannot select subtitles when I watch a foreign piece.
You got to do it on the Apple TV.
Yeah.
Hang on just a second. I have to take a break, but I'll continue to talk to you off the air. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. One more segment before we wrap it up. I don't want to go home. Let's do one more. Sorry about that, Judy. One other thing it might be, by the way, is not the Apple TV, but the signal it's getting, because you're on Wi-Fi, I bet, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So it may be that it works on those other things because they have better Wi-Fi radios or they're positioned better to get the Wi-Fi signal. So,
But I'm talking to you on the phone and my laptop and everything is the same distance away from the Wi-Fi router in the other room and they all work properly.
Is the Apple TV out or is it in a cabinet?
No, it's out. It's sitting right out.
Okay. So it's Wi-Fi receiver because it's super old. Isn't as good as your more modern stuff. That may be. I hate for you to spend $200 and then find out it does the same thing. That's all.
Well, my son just did. He's texting me at the same time. I'm looking at the text. He says he had two TVs. He had the old Apple TV and a new one. And he says the new one works. And it says on the Apple TV, you can choose any language you want, then English and everything works.
Yeah, you should be able to do that on your old Apple TV. You can't?
No, I can't.
Okay. Yeah, get a new one. Because, yeah, subtitles come from the Apple TV. And it's actually coming from the source. But if you're watching Netflix, you can choose subtitles. If you're watching Apple, you can choose subtitles. Amazon Prime, you can choose subtitles.
You are my absolute
hero. What language do you want?
Well, it was originally done in Hebrew, and they were dubbing it in English.
Oh, I hate the dubbing.
I hated it.
Yeah.
So when I selected it, then I said, here are the Hebrew, even though I didn't know what they were saying.
Yeah, but you wanted the English subtitles so you could understand it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yes, I'm with you. I've watched shows, you know, like Babylon Berlin in the dubbed version. It's so awful. I think this is a terrible show. And then I watch the undubbed subtitled version. It's like, wow, this is great. The acting's so good.
That's right.
These dubbers aren't maybe the best actors in the world. Maybe that's possible.
No, it's awful. It's awful. Yeah. Well, I thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You stay well, stay happy, stay healthy, and God bless you.
You too, sis.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Lady Laura, our musical director. Thank you, Kim Schaffer, taking their lives in their hands, coming into the studio to push buttons touched by who knows who else. You know, you just stay safe, wipe it down, put on your mask, protect yourself, okay? Because I want you back next week. Same for all of you, please. We love, I couldn't do this show without you, so. Please come back safe and healthy next week. We'll talk more about tech. But I'm going to go back to the phones here, see if I can get a couple more calls in before I have to go back and shelter in place for another week. They put me away like one of them ventriloquist dummies put me in the box. Hello, Tom in Warren, Ohio. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, doing okay. I got my keyboard for my iPad Pro. You didn't get yours.
I'm so jealous. You must have paid for expedited shipping. I don't know why I didn't.
I know somebody that is an Apple genius, so maybe that.
Oh, you maybe had. Yeah, they don't give me anything extra. In fact, they probably looked at the order and said, "Oh, this is for that Leo guy."
Yeah, and I'm wondering, it works nice because the iPad, the Apple Pencil stick, magnet.
I can't wait.
To it, but does the Apple Pencil work on an iPhone?
No, does not.
I noticed that.
Yeah, nope, does not. It has to have special circuitry on the device. Why Apple? You know, we thought there was a strong rumor that Apple, with the next generation iPhone, what is now the iPhone 11, would have supported stylus. But I think, you know, Apple's funny that way. It's the same thing we thought, oh, they'll put touch on a Macintosh. They've got to. Why wouldn't they? And no. Mm-mm. So I think they very much like to segregate their devices, say, no, you. Why would you use a stylus on the phone? Steve said you shouldn't. So we, So we won't.
Yeah, they're still going back to the old Steve.
Steve said not to, so.
You just use your finger.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That was the big thing when the iPhone came out. Remember, it was, oh, you don't need a stylus.
Yeah, you don't need a stylus. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Have you ever looked at the Ubiquiti?
I like Ubiquiti gear. I don't like the consumer Ubiquiti gear. They make Wi-Fi gear. Ubiquiti enterprise level is very high quality. I've used quite a bit of it.
I was looking at that. They have broadcast Wi-Fi antennas and that for big arenas and stuff.
Yeah, no, they're very good. Ubiquiti's widely used in enterprise. It was the first mesh system. Used to be very hard. You had to have a computer running Java to configure it. A computer running Java to configure it, things like that. But they've made it a little bit more friendly. It was really intended for businesses with IT departments. We use Ruckus, which is another common name in mesh systems. We have a very, as you might imagine, challenging environment here in the studio where everybody's on the Wi-Fi and there's multiple networks. It's very complicated, but we have a great IT guy. And he's put, I got a Ruckus in here. There's Ruckuses all over the place, and they seem to do a pretty good job.
Well, I was looking at the Alien 6, and it looks like it's a pretty good item as far as setup and coverage and all that, but there's none available unless you want to pay $200 on top of what they're asking at Ubiquiti.
It's kind of an interesting challenge these days. It's, the Alien. I tried the original Amplifies. Those are the consumer-grade products that Ubiquiti first came out, and I found them not – It was their consumer mesh, not to be very good, but that's not to say they won't continue to, you know, they won't continue to improve. And I'm sure these aliens. So these are Wi-Fi AX 802.11ax, which is Wi-Fi six. I would not at this point.
The Alien 6 router.
Here's one point though. I would keep in mind. I would not at this point buy a Wi-Fi 6 router because this week. The FTC ratified 6 gigahertz. They opened that up, and that will require a Wi-Fi 6E router. You cannot...
Oh, so it's still another level.
You cannot upgrade a Wi-Fi 6 router. As you know, I bought one for a ridiculous amount of money. Now I'm bummed because as of 3 days ago, the... FCC approved the use of the 6 gigahertz band. This is now the thing to keep in mind is it's a very high frequency. It will not go through walls. It probably wouldn't go through curtains. It won't go through people. As you know, the higher the frequency.
Line of sight, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's probably line of sight. As you know, the higher the frequency, the more it bounces off things. And so we're really high now at Wi-Fi 6. In fact, Wi-Fi 6 was mostly used by emergency services for line of sight, microwave, things like that.
Okay.
So, did I say the FTC? I meant the FCC. I hope I said the FCC, the Federal the Federal Communications Commission. On the 23rd, they ratified this. So, at this point, Wi-Fi 6 routers are already out of date.
Wow.
They're just coming out.
Yeah, they're not real cheap either.
No, I spent. I don't
I'm
even want
that. I don't know if I'm going to update this yet, but I'm going to see if I can get a hold of one of these Ubiquities at a standard regular retail price instead of.
If you can get it at a regular price, Wi-Fi 6 is faster, about 20% faster, more reliable. I like Wi-Fi 6. And, you know, I think Ubiquiti is a great company, and I'm sure that they have fixed whatever shortcomings there were in the Amplify series. So I'd have no hesitation to recommend it. But just understand, I don't know how long it's going to take, but I don't anticipate it's going to take too long. By the end of this year, we'll see Wi-Fi 6E routers. And here's why you might want it. Because it doesn't go through walls, congestion is going to be less of a problem. Your neighbor's Wi-Fi, you won't see any 6 gigahertz Wi-Fi from anywhere except the room you're in. So it will be a good choice for routers where you're willing to put mesh systems where you're willing to put a lot of extensions in.
Right.
Like the Plume, for instance, where, you know, they wanted a base unit in every room. I would expect Plume to immediately embrace 6E because it's that would make a lot of sense. Six gigahertz will be a great choice because nobody will be on it and there'll be no congestion. So it'll solve a lot of the problems.
I got plenty of congestion in my neighborhood.
Gosh, those, I have plenty too. Tom, a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, Leo.
Stay safe. All right.
And a good week.
Take care. Last call of the day. Glenn in Torrance, California. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Leo. I'd like to talk about the autonomous vehicles because I'm a recently retired industrial automation technician.
Yeah.
And I had maybe almost a 40-year career fixing electronics that failed. and now we're asking people to get in these vehicles that don't have a driver.
Why?
The same electronics that I worked 40 years on fixing. And I'm just wondering, when do you think people with a background in understanding how they work, the autonomous vehicles, are going to feel comfortable for their personal
transportation? Would you let it drive you home?
Well, I wouldn't drive in an airplane that was nose to tail with left-turn airplanes driving in front of it if it didn't have a pilot in it.
True, but of course, airplanes do have autopilots that work quite well. We've seen, you know, some autonomy used appropriately. I think we're still a long way off from true self-driving vehicles, but I agree 100%. Now, remember, things can fail and fail safe. When your elevator fails, you don't tumble to the ground. So I hope
we have redundancy.
We have redundancy and we have fail-safe systems and we have a reasonable way that if the autopilot fails that we can either take control and or just slow down, pull over, get out of the way. So I would hope. But I'm with you. I think this is a big challenge. Here's what's going to push it forward. Auto insurance companies. We have so many deaths, tens of thousands of deaths every year, 1 million worldwide in auto accidents. If we can come up with a system that's more reliable, I think there'll be good reason to use it, but it's got to be more reliable. I agree with you. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a safe geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.